And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's up, folks? Welcome to the 74th episode of the Fanboy Garage. Again, as always, we are so happy to have you guys here with us. Again, just two fellas talking about pop culture, entertainment, movies, and TV. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff to talk about today.
Yeah.
And but let's do it like we always do it. Let's start with the box office.
All right, so the box office this week, Frozen 2, once again, leading the pack, $35 million this weekend. It's a 59% drop, which is a little steeper than...
Sure.
You know, it is coming off of the Thanksgiving holiday, but it's a little steeper than expected. But still, I mean, the movie's, you know, doing huge numbers.
Like over $900 million globally.
Yeah, it's almost $340 million domestic, $584 million overseas, $924 million as of the Tuesday night that we record this show. So, yeah.
Amazing.
Very big. And in second place was Knives Out again, another $14.2 million. So that movie now on a $40 million budget, it's almost $65 million domestic, almost identical numbers, $61.3 million international for $126.1 million worldwide, which is pretty good.
Cool.
And then another movie that we, you know, haven't really talked about at all, which has been doing very well, is Ford versus Ferrari.
I really want to see that, yeah, but I haven't.
$6.6 million this weekend. And that movie so far to date, $91.8 million domestic, $77.2 international, $169 million worldwide.
Nice.
Yeah. And then Queen and Slim at $6.64 million, and then A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood at $5.2
million. Another movie I
want to see. Yeah, round out the top five this weekend. So really not much to talk about other than the fact that Frozen is, you know, they'll blow past $1 billion this coming weekend.
Yeah.
And also, Jumanji, The Next Level, opened overseas a week earlier than it's, you know, going to debut here in the United States. And it did $52.8 million, including $24.9 million in China. So the first movie did $77.9 million in China, and it did an incredible $962.1 million overseas.
Bananas.
Yeah, so it looks like it's well on its way to doing incredible business again. I liked that first, well, I guess technically the second Jumanji film.
Yeah,
I liked it a lot, actually. I liked it way more than I thought I would.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, so I'm kind of excited for this one.
Yeah, reviews seem decent.
Yeah.
I definitely want to check that one out, too. I mean, let's just add it to the list of movies I need to see, which I probably won't.
Exactly, yeah.
To be honest here.
Sure.
But yeah, so we'll see if that that shakes things up. I'm pretty sure it will.
Yeah.
For Frozen. But, yeah, you know, the interesting thing about Frozen is it's going to be like the sixth film of 2019 to hit $1 billion. So,
yeah,
that's saying something. And I'm sure it's like the sixth movie. Well, no, it's probably the fifth movie for Disney.
Well, Disney, I read something the other day that said Disney is going to do like $10 billion this year.
It's ridiculous.
Which is like $3 billion more than the record that they had set previously for a year. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's like double the amount of what they paid for Star Wars.
Yeah, they've done
that's
okay.
Crazy.
With their
and then there's that, right? You've got Rise of Skywalker that drops in 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks. I mean, that is coming very quickly. It seemed like it was never going to get
2 weeks
here.
Next week.
Well, right, isn't next it? Week from when you're hearing this, yeah.
Yeah. Holy smokes.
It's insane. It feels like it was so long ago, because I think it was, that I bought my tickets, that it felt like this thing was never going to get here, and now it's like here, and I don't, like, I'm ready, but I don't know that I'm ready yet. Like,
Yeah, same. I'm like, oh, am I really just going to see this movie once? That's kind of where it's at. And I like, had to bite the bullet, because I do think, if I remember correctly, I am seeing a 3D version of this film, which I'm not happy about, but it was like the only tickets I can get on Friday.
Right.
So, yeah, there's that. not happy about that. But I'm excited about seeing the film, and you know, the posters are dropping like every day. TV spots, and I've got to be honest, and I'm sorry, I totally just took over. We're going to talk about Star Wars, but I'm over all of the marketing. I don't need it anymore.
Like, yeah, although they have been releasing some really cool posters.
Yeah, the posters are sweet.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, the last one I shared recently was the one with the two lightsabers crossing over with Vader's helmet in the middle. And I was like, cool. Oh, I guess that's confirmed.
Well, yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that was a big secret, but.
No, I know, but can we not? And actually, no, I'm not seeing it in 3D. Thank God.
Oh, good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
All right. So, I mean, obviously we're both very excited about Star Wars, but a few other things came out, trailers anyway, came out this week that we're very excited about. So I don't know where you want to start. There was Ghostbusters Afterlife. There was Wonder Woman 84. There was the Mulan trailer. Obviously we're not going to start with Mulan, but where do you want to start? Ghostbusters, Wonder Woman?
Let's do Wonder Woman.
All right. So the Wonder Woman 84 trailer finally debuted. This is, again, another movie that, and they moved this one back, right? Yeah, so it felt like feels like it's never coming out. But plus, it's one of my most anticipated movies. It might be my most anticipated movie of next year. Finally, this trailer comes out, and it was everything I had hoped it would be. It's just a great trailer. The movie looks colorful and vibrant, and it's very much playing on the 80s. You know, themes and nostalgia, which is exciting. I mean, I was an 80s kid, so I don't mind a little 80s nostalgia. I like that they're kind of look like they're doing the reverse fish out of water concept now with Steve Trevor.
Right.
Right. Who's the one who's the fish out of water now. And, you know, he looks at the garbage can, doesn't like, you know what I mean? Like, there's that whole little gag there. She's like, it's a garbage can. And he's like lost. So yeah, like that stuff is cool. Yeah, I mean the music was cool. They have that Wonder Woman costume keeps getting more and more colorful.
Yeah, I saw that thing pop out like when her foot comes down, and I was like, oh yes, okay, they are really leaning in now with the bright and vibrant color. This is no longer the sort of Snyder version of Wonder Woman with the blood-stained armor and all of that stuff, which, again, I think, and as we talked before, they had certainly touched up in post for her first outing. But, yeah, the costume looks great.
Yeah. And, yeah, so, I mean, they didn't give you a lot of Cheetah.
They gave nothing.
Right, which I think is a good idea.
They gave nothing on the plot either.
Which is also fine.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, totally. Teaser trailer, we've got, what, it's June?
Yes.
This thing drops?
Yeah.
Is it June?
Wonder Woman 84? No. Is it June?
No. When is this? April?
It's
2020, whenever.
Yeah.
No idea.
It comes out, what did you say?
June.
June 5th, yeah, 2020.
Okay, so I was right. Yeah. Yeah, so I'm sure there'll be other trailers, but Pedro Pascal is in it, and he looks as douchey as ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
I gotta be honest here. I was like, ah, okay, that's fine for the trailer. I because I expect this to be great. You know what I mean? Like, I love the first Wonder Woman. Like, love it.
Right.
And so I was kind of like, oh, yeah, great. This is interesting. You know, the whole mall thing, the 80s thing, the fish out of water thing was cool. But I was just kind of like, all right. Like, my excitement levels were kind of, like, tempered. Showed it to my wife. She's like, wow, that looks really good. What do you think? And I'm like, yeah. And I don't know where that's coming from. Maybe it's just because I already know that this is going to be a good movie, or I already want it to be a good movie, so I don't need a trailer again to sell me on this. But then there's the other part of it's like, can lightning strike twice?
Yeah, absolutely it can. I don't see why it couldn't.
No, 100%.
But yeah. I don't, because I don't really look at it as lightning, you know, being struck for that first movie. I think that was just a well-made film that understood what it was. and what it needed to be. But I guess, is it really that it tempered your expectations, or did it just kind of meet your expectations? Therefore,
because you were so pumped, for me to be super excited.
Exactly, you were already
exceed my expectations. Yes,
yeah. When your bar is so high, I guess so. We've become so accustomed to having that like immediate reaction now, that it's like if something just kind of meets our expectations and something we think is great, like
still great. Yeah,
yeah. You don't get that like emotional push sometimes, going to get like if something exceeds what your expectations were or under, you know, sells it. So I think that we've become so used to like extreme emotion now that sometimes when something just is right on,
And I mean, it's like and the thing is too, like this film, at least in what we were being shown, is like a visual spectacle. Like there's a lot of cool shit that's happening in that trailer. And it's like, oh, that's cool. But like that also happened in the first movie, which is fine. And it's great because it worked. I'm just like, oh, all right. The one thing I was like, wait, I had to watch it like four times. I'm like, is she like swinging off of lightning bolts? Yes. She is swinging off of lightning bolts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
So the badass scene to me was like when she rolled out in the all gold thing.
Yes.
With the wings and like, wow, shattered. I don't know what it was I was watching, but I was like, that's dope. Yeah. Whatever that was, for the hottest second.
Like, that was probably that one moment for a trailer that's 6 months out that, you know, they threw that in there to kind of really grab you.
It's the Ray, the dark Ray double lightsaber, like, oh, shit.
Yes.
That's what that was.
Yeah. Or I guess even in a way like, and I wish they kind of hadn't done this at the time, but like, you know, showing you like Aquaman coming out in the classic costume.
Yeah.
In the trailer.
Yeah. You know? Like parting that waterfall and then you kind of hear that ding with the trident. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the heroic moment. And, you know, for better or worse, that's what's going to sell. That's what's going to get people super jazzed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, at least from folks I've talked to about Wonder Woman 1984, it definitely struck the right chords. Everyone's really, really excited about it. I mean, why wouldn't they be excited about it?
Of course.
It's Wonder Woman, right? So,
yeah.
You know, in the absence of Batman and certainly in the absence of Superman, this is great. This is phenomenal. This is, you know.
Wonder Woman is now a super duper, like, A-list, like, everyone is anticipating this movie. And great. I mean, it's good and it looks fun and it looks like I said, it just looks like everything it needs to be. So yeah, I mean, the question I guess is, and we're not gonna get into this now, but I guess it doesn't necessarily matter either, but you know, this movie is gonna do over $1 billion, right?
Yeah,
I mean, the first movie did, what, 880 or whatever, and that was a surprise. And
the goodwill that DC in the past, you know, couple year has really garnered, you know, it deserves it, without a doubt. And I think, you know, the ship has been righted, I guess, if that's how you say it. The ship is now steady. And you know, they're turning out quality films, and you know, they're playing. I want to say loose with the connected universe.
Yeah,
but you know, yeah, and it's working.
$821 million for the first Wonder Woman, and you know, I mean, it's and I just think that this is a movie that's gained even more momentum since, because I don't know very many people that have seen Wonder Woman and haven't really loved it.
Right.
You know, like even people you talk to that are like, oh, I didn't really like, you know, this or that or whatever. And they're like, oh, but Wonder Woman I really liked, you know. So it's like that one movie that I think almost everybody agrees on when it comes to like the, you know, that wave of DC films. Right. So I think
I mean, it was a very character driven film.
Sure.
And
uplifting and heroic and more of a classic superhero. Yeah, it was a classic superhero film in a lot of ways.
Totally. And if you think about it, I mean, a lot of what we've been getting after Wonder Woman you know, it's with the exception of Justice League.
Well, that doesn't
has
count.
Been
Yeah.
has been in that vein, very character centric.
Sure.
Let's kind of, you know, let's have fun with these things,
yes.
and not like, oh, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy type fun or Thor Ragnarok kind of way. But like, yeah, let's weave in some humor and, you know, some tongue in cheek moments and things like that. And these movies have been successful, with the exception of Joker. Not in its success, but in its
themes. Yeah, its feel. It's
themes. Yeah. Although there were some funny moments in Joker that that I literally like just busted out laughing. Like when he gets I'm sorry to jump into Joker, but like as he gets interrogated by the police, and then he goes to walk back into the hospital and he bangs his face against the window.
Sure.
Yeah, I lost my shit.
Well, I mean, there's always people,
or when the little person's trying to unlock the door.
Yeah, people have right, and it's yeah. Look, you need a little bit of like, you know, levity sometimes in these really intense films, because you need to like ease people a little bit, and then you set them up for like something else. You
totally.
Know, it's just nothing wrong with any of that. But there were people though that were complaining. Or trying to compare and saying, oh, this movie looks too much like Thor Ragnarok.
Oh,
Wonder Woman 84, yeah. I mean, I guess it's just, you know, Twitter in 2019.
Yeah,
it's all to be expected.
Know.
Right away, there's always, again, there's that knee-jerk reaction of like, we have to be, one, negative, and two, have to, you know, do that comparison to something from, it's like, no.
I'm going over it.
Yeah.
To be honest,
I get it. Yeah, just enjoy the thing.
Oh my
god!
Yeah, oh my god! So I mean, why do we have to take and pull everything apart?
Yeah,
it's entertainment.
Sure,
check your stupid brain at the door and enjoy yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Ugh.
So that was Wonder Woman. Yeah, so Ghostbusters Afterlife. Now this is a movie that I said last show that was not really on my radar that much, and. You know, what I realized, I guess, in the last couple of days is, for whatever reason, I guess Ghostbusters doesn't hold the special place in my heart that it does for a lot of other people. Like, I love the first Ghostbusters, don't get me wrong. But, like, I was a little blown away by the amount of people that, after watching this trailer, were like, emotional and like talking about how like, you know, they feel like they're like kids and just seeing all the nostalgia over like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that was me.
Well, I know it was you, but I saw a lot of people like that though. And I was a little surprised by that because I never realized that Ghostbusters had like that much of an impact, you know, on people like that, So, and I guess it's been a while, not counting that, you know, the remake, reboot, whatever. It's been a while since there's been any Ghostbusters related stuff. But yeah, so anyway, this trailer came out and it's a really good trailer. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, got that Stranger Things Monster Squad meets Ghostbusters vibe going for it.
Sure.
Which is an interesting way to handle this, right? A cool concept. The trailer itself is not. It doesn't feel like the tone of the original Ghostbusters at all.
No, not one bit.
Yeah, it feels much more Stranger Things-esque or like, you know, Stand By Me or like any of those types of or it. Well, it, yeah, a little less intense, but.
Yeah, but you know.
Sure.
Like the gang gets, you know,
of course.
Gang gets together.
Yeah, so it's got more of that vibe, just the look of it, the feel of it. But, you know, there are those nostalgic moments when you start to see very familiar things, which is cool. And who knows, again, we don't know how much of the movie we're seeing, right, in this trailer.
Right.
I have a feeling we're not seeing a whole lot of it, actually. I definitely think it came off really well. I'm much more interested in this movie now than I was a week ago. And I think it's a great concept. And I think if it hits, it's one that they could take. For, you know, they can go on with this for a little while now, like as a complete reboot almost without, you know, like a follow-up, but make a whole new franchise out of it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was definitely one of those people that kind of got wrapped up in the nostalgia of this. And, you know, it's funny because, like, Ghostbusters, certainly was like classic to me, and I absolutely adore that film. And the second one, more so because I think I was a little older, and so I got to understand it a bit more and live with it. And, you know, I grew up in the city, so like seeing all that stuff and kind of reminding myself of you know, some of the iconic moments in both films was great. And so watching this...
Wait, I'm sorry, hold on. Did you like Ghostbusters 2 more than Ghostbusters 1?
No.
Oh.
I have like better memories of that because I understood it.
Sure.
More.
Makes sense, yeah.
But I used to watch Ghostbusters like the first one all the time. So watching this trailer, and it's funny because you were talking about the expectation things. Like, my expectations for Ghostbusters was way down, because to me, it's been 30 something years since we've had a successful Ghostbusters film. They tried with the female led one. It was a shit show. Not because it was female led. It's just poorly written. It's poorly acted. It was just a bad movie.
Yes.
And so we get this trailer, and it starts to pull all the right levers with kind of going back to the 80s nostalgia. The kid, obviously, the Finn Wolfhard, who is like killing it right now in all of the throwback, you know, group films, and kind of pulling on the Goonies heartstrings. And they start laying out this story of like, oh, it's Egon's grandkids.
Yeah.
You know? And I think the thing that kind of like sealed the deal for me is that they didn't know anything. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're, to me and to everyone else, like, Egon Spengler is like a legend, and his grandkids know nothing of it. And Paul Rudd is like us, who's like, oh, you know, oh my God, that's a great replica, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, oh, wait a second. Who are you again? Like, what was your, you know, what was your name? And so, like, the idea of that, of kind of introducing these kids to this, you know, this icon, yeah, is a fun idea.
Sure.
And I think the thing that really sealed the deal for me was hearing Bill Murray's voice in the voiceover. Because, yes, he's been the biggest sort of question mark, mm-hmm, in you know, these films, and sort of the return of the Ghostbusters proper. And to have him come back is great. And I'm really looking forward to it. It blew my mind in terms of expectations, and it just looks great.
Right. So, and that's exactly though that conversation we just had, right? Where you saw two trailers this week. Well, and more than that, but just these two trailers, Wonder Woman 84 and Ghostbusters Afterlife. One movie you already expected to be great, right? So a really strong trailer comes out for it, but it didn't move the needle for you, but it didn't have to move the needle, right? The needle was already pinged all the way, right?
Yes.
So, and then Ghostbusters Afterlife, a movie that was not high on your radar, so to speak, but it has this really great trailer that comes out, and now it, so you got that emotional rush from it because it took you from a place that was low to a place that was high.
Right.
Yes. So that's that perfect 100%. Example of how sometimes, like, just our expectations and stuff can change that immediate emotional response that we have to things. But, I think it's a really cool concept. I mean, I love that they're, you know, figuring out a way too to deal with the, you know, the fact that Harold Ramis is no longer with us.
Right.
And that's essentially a plot point, you know, in the movie, which is really cool too. I will say that, as far as Ghostbusters nostalgia goes, though, if anybody has never seen the real Ghostbusters,
yeah, the cartoon series,
yeah, you should. It's more so the earlier episodes before it turned into like Slimer and the real Ghostbusters. Because that's actually some really good animated television from the 80s. Underrated stuff. And I actually, as a kid, I was enjoying that even more than Ghostbusters 2, actually. I'm not kidding. Like, that's a really good show. Like I said, especially those early couple of seasons. They're available, too. You can find them different streaming services and whatnot.
Yeah, it's... No, I mean, they've had, you know, a couple of cool moments. Like, obviously, the animated TV show was great. They had a video game, which kind of had everyone reprise their roles. So that, and that was a wildly popular video game. I think it was probably PS3 or whatever. But yeah, this, and you know what I think the thing is too, is that it's been backed by the original creators, right? So if you remember, I think this was in the summertime, it kind of caught everybody off guard because there was a teaser that was dropped out of nowhere with, it was like a barn and you kind of hear noise in the background and lights going off, and then you see the Ecto-1 being worked on, and you remember that one?
Yeah,
it's kind of like caught everyone off. And then it's like Jason Reitman, who is the son of Ivan Reitman, who directed the first film. So it's like, yeah, this has got good legacy behind it, and it seems like everyone's on board. So I'm ready for this one.
Yeah, this is definitely on my radar now. And I just have a feeling the more, you know, we see of it, the more excited that I'm going to get for this. And this feels like the absolute right time for this movie.
Yeah.
You know, because you're blending nostalgia, but you're also this, I mean, potentially, you know, we don't know how good the movie's going to be and whatnot, but, and how well they'll market it, but potentially this thing could be huge. You know, if realize, because you're pulling in different audiences, right? So you're going to pull in the nostalgia crowd, right? So people like us who grew up on watching, you know, the original.
Right.
And because it's been so long, you know, it's actually now like, it, you know, it's not one of these like, okay, another unnecessary remake again. Like, it's been long enough, you know, and again, not counting the reboot, like you said, it's not a good movie for those reasons, the fact that it's just not a good movie. So it doesn't even count for me. But like the original Ghostbusters franchise has been away long enough now to where I'm ready for some nostalgia, you know, for it. So you're going to get that audience, but you're also going to get a new audience, you know, an audience that's been watching Stranger Things and watched It and is into the whole idea of like kids versus the bad guy, you know, the monsters type of thing. Right. And so you're going to be able to pull in multi-generations here with this film. So yeah, I mean, I think it could potentially be huge if they, you know, as long as it turns out to be a good movie, and the marketing holds up. I mean, next year is going to be kind of a busy year, but I definitely think there's room for this.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if I think to your point earlier, if it takes off, we've got another franchise under our belt.
Yeah,
you know. I think it's got all the right stuff, at least from what I see in the trailer. And so, we'll see how it shakes out. This one too, it was a 2020, right?
Yeah, 2020.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know. It's nice to see, though, after, like, the Terminator stuff and all this stuff and Charlie's Angels and whatnot, that it's like, this thing feels nostalgic but fresh at the same time.
Right.
And that's just not something that we're used to. Because they could have mailed this in, right? I mean, they just could have used the Ghostbusters name.
And Sony tried.
Yeah, Sony tried. Or, you know, and just tried to get, like, as, you know, the original guys back, or, you know, the living ones anyway, and done, like, a retread, and they could have gone the route of, like, oh, let's see what they're like now as, like, they're old men having to get back, you know, to try to... And that could have been just a whole, like, hammy, slapstick kind of thing, and that
wouldn't
have
worked.
This
is my biggest concern about Indiana Jones. Okay, it's right there, what you just said.
Okay.
It's like the old men coming back, blah, blah, blah. And, like, that to me feels like we're just, you know, trying to grab some cash.
Yeah, because that could have just been one. This movie technically could have been one just giant joke.
Sure.
Just giant old age joke, right? Or they could have riffed on the whole idea of, like, how, you know, Bill Murray hasn't really wanted to be a part of this. And that could have been, like, a thing. You know what I mean? Like, the whole, like, begrudgingly having to get back into this and... You know, and just a bunch of old, you know, old person jokes and things like that, and aging jokes and stuff like that. That's what this could have been.
I mean, but in truth be told, we don't know if it goes in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, it could, but it would be weird if after this trailer that's like the main direction of this film.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but to me, I'm wondering. Okay, so clearly Dan Aykroyd Bill Murray, how
Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts is in it, and Sigourney Weaver's in it. They all have cameo,
yeah,
or at least
have some sort of part to play.
Sure.
I wonder if they bring Rick Moranis back.
Actually, you're like the third person that just people I was talking to about it this week asked the same thing.
I mean, you know what the funny thing is? So a lot of, speaking about Rick Moranis, a lot of people think that he retired.
Right.
But he actually hasn't. He's still sort of acting. He does a lot of voice work. And they had interviewed him recently because of, you know, the failure of the other Ghostbusters film. I'm just going to call it the other Ghostbusters film. And he just was like, nah, you know, I've read some parts, and if it doesn't interest me, I don't have to do it anymore. Like, sure. I don't need to – I've already made my money. I don't need to do it. So I'm just wondering if this had all of the right – if it had enough of the juice to get Bill Murray back in the saddle. I wonder if it did the same for Rick Moranis. I certainly hope so.
It's very possible. I mean, it's funny. If this thing winds up being the huge hit and it leads to, like, a new franchise kind of, or – it's going to render that last movie as like almost that's going to be go along with like that original Ghostbusters thing, you know, the TV show with the ape that they wound up becoming a cartoon too, where there was it's going to go that route. Like, it's going to be, that's how people are going to talk about it. Like, oh, remember that other Ghostbusters thing?
It's so funny. And you know what? Cause I didn't know about this other Ghostbusters thing until, that Netflix show that just dropped, The Movies That Made Us.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and for those of you who are looking for shows, by the way, just a quick plug on that one, The Movies That Made Us on Netflix. They've got some really interesting behind-the-scenes stuff on, like, how these movies, these iconic movies have made and some of the struggles that they had to endure to get made. Sorry, I think I can speak English today. And so Dirty Dancing is part of that, and Home Alone, and Ghostbusters. I just watched Ghostbusters, and then Die Hard, of course. So check that out. But, yeah, I mean, I hope this one really, really delivers. And to your point, yeah, I mean, this is like taking, you know, Captain America the Winter Soldier and comparing it to one of those crappy 80s versions when they tried to get.
So have you not seen ever any of that other Ghostbusters stuff?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Like I don't really, the live action show, I don't know that I've seen much of, but I remember the cartoon vividly, the Filmation's Ghostbusters.
And I
actually had the toy. I was such a, and I this is why going to Comic-Con drives me crazy. Cause I was such a figure collector when I was a kid. Like, I had every action figure from, like, every show that was on TV that I watched, like, even 30 seconds of. I kept none of them, of course, which is why I have to still work. But, I even had those figures from that cartoon.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's not a bad cartoon by the sins of, like, 80s Filmation cartoons, but, like, it's, that's why they had to call that Ghostbusters cartoon the real Ghostbusters, because they were out at the same time.
Well, so here's the funny thing. So when you watch The Movies That Made Us, they talk about that show. It predated the Ghostbusters movies.
Yes.
And so they were filming scenes twice when filming the original Ghostbusters. And originally, the Ghostbusters that we know of were going to be called the Ghost Breakers, because they didn't. Columbia didn't want to pay the rights.
Ghost
to
Breakers. That would have been terrible.
That's been horrible.
And how would would the logo have changed at all?
No, the logo was the same.
Oh,
like,
really?
There's a scene where Venkman is overseeing the Ghostbusters kind of sign go up on the firehouse, and they had to do it twice, and they show it. It was like, oh, Ghostbusters, and then the second scene was Ghost Breakers.
Ugh.
Going through the same line of dialogue and all that stuff. And so essentially what ended up winning over Columbia to kind of seek out the rights and buy them from Filmation was they had like 600 extras or 400 extras or so kind of chanting Ghostbusters. And that was the first shot that they were doing. They were like, we can't do this again with Ghost Breakers. And so one of the producers on the set went to a payphone, put it up to, you know, to the crowd cheering Ghostbusters, 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 right? To a Columbia executive, and they were like, you gotta get these rights to this, because we're not doing this again. And so they did.
There you go.
Yeah, Ghost but check, definitely check out definitely check out that series because it's pretty dope.
Yeah,
even the Dirty Dancing one was awesome.
Yeah, don't like that. You don't like it?
No, I don't like that shit.
You don't watch that once a year?
No, my wife does though.
Do the lift in the living room with the wife?
No. I do the lift with my like son, who's like 11 pounds.
Sure.
Or my cat, but yeah, definitely no. I'm not a
got it. All right. So the other trailer that came out this week was the Mulan trailer.
Talk about exceeding expectations.
Yeah, for the newest gazillion dollar, I'm sure, live action Disney film. You talk about a movie. I didn't even know this movie was coming out, or I had forgotten about it. So to say it wasn't on my radar would be an understatement. But yeah, the trailer looked spectacular.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
It was really good. I know some of the actors and actresses in this film, but main character who's playing Mulan, I don't know. And it just looks, it's stunning, first of all. And it has that Asian Chinese vibe to it of, films made in China. Like I don't even know how to describe it, but like when you see the trailer, you're like, yeah, it's definitely a film that's staying true to its roots. I do like the Mulan animated film, but this is definitely the one that I think is going to do. I don't want to say do better, but will help to propel the character further. Everything else has kind of been like, oh, yeah, that's great. Like, it's nice to see that. But I actually think this one is going to be more revered, I'd say. Because it just has a different, I don't know, it's got a different vibe to it. I don't know if I'm actually helping this at all.
Yeah, probably not.
I really dug it. And there was I kind of got emotional in it. And I don't know exactly why.
Right, because Mulan is not, I mean, it was a successful film and all, but it's not as iconic as, like The Lion King, for instance, right?
Right.
Or The Little Mermaid, even, or Beauty and the Beast. I mean, it's kind of like that next level down. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe that's part of, why it kind of struck me. And so that's the type of movie that I think can absolutely work. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they all work financially, but like could absolutely work as a live action thing, because I think you could, there's so much room there for interpretation, live action interpretation.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, after I watched it, I was like, man, I really hope we don't get a Pocahontas.
I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
Did you see, though, interestingly, The Lion King? So Disney submitted it to the Hollywood Foreign Press for consideration for the Golden Globes in the best motion picture comedy or musical. But the Hollywood Foreign Press actually on their own chose to switch it and nominated it for best animated feature.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those where
and also the Directors Guild, the Art Directors Guild nominations, they also had it in the best animated feature and best animation film production design categories. And here's another interesting note. The production designer on the film, a gentleman named James Chinland, Disney encourages the craft artists to self-submit their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he submitted his own work to the Art Directors Guild as an animated feature.
I guess that's real, right?
Like, yeah. So much for the whole idea of that being a live action.
You know the other interesting thing is, so I watch Corridor Digital. These guys from, they're digital effects artists, and they do this awesome YouTube series, where it's like VFX artists react to bad or good CGI, right? And they talked a little bit about the making of The Lion King. And it makes me wonder, because if you do photo rendering, which basically means you're out there kind of taking photos of things, and then you take those photos and you plug it into a computer, it will self-generate. It'll generate like what the images or sort of landscapes are supposed to look like based off of what you've provided to the computer. That to me is like, is that really animation? Like, I know that there's a lot of VFX artists that had to render, you know, articulation and emotion and all that stuff that's in those characters' faces, but it's, yeah, I guess it is. I guess it is animated, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, it's look, things evolve, with technology and whatnot. I mean, yeah, animation doesn't mean hand drawn, right?
No,
hand drawing is a form of animation, sure, but it's not, you know, it's not the only form of animation. So,
right. Yeah, that's, ooh, that's,
yeah, I mean,
that's,
animation is basically when you're taking something, right, that is not living, right, and you animate it. You actually make it move and, you know, come to life.
You don't actually have real actors, like physical actors on a set. Yeah, I guess it makes sense. Sure. That's a wild concept.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of things changing.
Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of things that are changing, Marvel TV, they're changing. Mm. And we've spoken about this before, and this is not a shock to anybody, but it came out today that Marvel Television is basically officially folding. We hadn't talked about this, but they had already announced that The Runaways was going to end after this season.
Sure.
And we know that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was ending after this season. We know that the Ghost Rider show was nixed, right?
Right.
They decided not to go along with it. So at this point, Marvel TV, all that's left of what was, you know, Marvel TV, that the entity that Jeff Loeb was overseeing, is basically four animated shows for Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And then another live action show, Hellstrom. Which is for Hulu. So that's it, basically. And once those run their course, which I would assume will be rapidly, that'll be it. And then it's just going to become all, you know, the Marvel Studios stuff, like the stuff on Disney Plus and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So I guess an official end of an era.
It's the power of Feige.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's the power of the billions and billions of dollars that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have seen some stills from the new shows that will be rolling out on Disney Plus. They look interesting. So, you know, we'll see how those shake out. I'm hoping that some of this stuff kind of bubbles back up. Like, I would love to see a Ghost Rider series. And I would love to see a continuation of some of these other characters, but I don't know from a licensing perspective, like what the deals were, both from a TV side, like if they have to kind of wait before they revisit. All's well as end well.
You know what's interesting though to me, like, look, I get it. They're turning everything over to Feige. He's running the show, but like, would it have really killed them to have kept some of these things in development or kept going with some of these things and still keep it under the, I mean, are they that obsessed with everything having to be Marvel Studios and Marvel Studios having everything having to tie everything together? Like, would it have,
you know, so it's funny. So I think, yes, it's one part of that, right? It's a control and having the ability to say, you know what, this could make for a really good movie, or this could tie into something else. What I also think it is, and I think this is the you know, numero uno reason, is you get to pull all your assets back into one one service. You get to get people to keep coming back to Disney Plus.
Well, that's all fine. I get all that, but I'm not saying that, like, keep them as is. I'm saying, like, would it have killed Marvel Studios to say, like, are they really going to be making a Ghost Rider film anytime soon? So, like, would it have hurt them to say, hey, you know what, let's re-put this Ghost Rider show with Gabriel Luna, like, back in the slate. Like, we'll do it under our umbrella.
Right.
But, like, you know, the character was fairly popular and well-received, and I think people, and it's something we can put up there. But it's like everything, though, now has to tie into the MCU, or, like, I feel like, or it's not going to see the light of day, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah, no, I agree with it. And it could also be just politics, right? Having these people who have been an obstacle, I guess, maybe in the minds of Kevin Feige, now again oversees all of Marvel. but having, you know, Jeff Loeb or Ike Perlmutter, I can never get his last name right. Perlmutter?
Yeah.
Thank you. Having these people as obstacles for Feige and the ability to pick and choose what he sees, you know,
right,
come to light. I'm sure you don't want to pay any money to these people anymore. So all of the stuff that they were working on gets, you know, put it on hold or in the dumpster or, you know, in obscurity forever,
I guess.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't, you know, who knows? Who knows what their rationale is? But I do hope, you know, like things like Daredevil, that's great stuff.
Sure. And the Punisher, I mean,
that was like really, really good stuff.
Yep. Oh, well.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Let's get to some of the TV that we watched this week. So we'll start with Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yeah.
So it's finally here. I have seen, so now we're recording this on Tuesday, December 10th. So I have seen the first two parts of this. I have not seen part three because it's actually airing as we record this. So I'll watch that probably tomorrow. You have seen part one only, right, at this point?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, so this is something I was really excited about. And, like, the opening of part one just...
Oh, that was awesome.
Oh, so amazing. Had me
so
grinning
good.
From ear to ear. Robert Wool showing up with the Batman theme and Burt Ward popping up and the whole, like, explanation. It just felt so comic book. That sucked me in completely.
Yep.
I almost feel like that was a little bit of the peak of that episode.
You are 100% right.
So far, going through the first two episodes, I will say that I'm enjoying the fan service a lot.
So here's the thing, like, that first episode.
Yeah.
There was like, that's all the fan service that was kind of thrown in there.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I hate Supergirl.
Yes, we know,
like,
know that.
It's so weak. It's such a weakly, it's so weak and the writing is so bad. Like, I was dying for them to move it forward and just like, I don't care about anything that's happening on this earth. Thank God they took them off and it became like, Oliver's thing and getting some of the other characters involved. I was like, great. Cause if this only hinges on whatever's happening in Supergirl's world, like so bad. I actually think that they should have skipped over Supergirl entirely. Is it me, but like the dude with the long hair?
I get it. Yes, you know, I have not watched Supergirl at all in the last...
Bury your hand in the sand, please. Yeah. You suck so
I
bad.
Haven't watched the last two seasons. That character was a little startling to me, but...
I'm like, who? What show is... Dude, I didn't know I was watching Perfect Strangers.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah,
really
bad. But I still enjoyed it because the weak parts of this are inherent to these CW shows now, right? Writing, acting, things like that. I mean, there's some positive things about it as far as that goes, but I was just loving the idea of it, and I feel the concept and the fan service and the fun of all of this and what they've accomplished. I mean, this is still at the end of the day a CW DC universe.
Sure.
I mean,
I gotta say, man, like the CGI, the work that's being done there, both looks really good.
Yeah.
When it needs to,
it doesn't all hold up. See in episode two, but but still on a relatively small television budget.
It looks good. It's good.
Yeah. It's good for what it is. Yeah. It's pretty epic for that.
For me, I adore what they're doing. I think it's brilliant.
Yep.
And, I'm looking forward to kind of catching up. The one thing I am super, super disappointed about, and one of the reasons why I'm not catching episode two, I could have watched it some point today, is I'm trying to catch up on some of the other episodes for the shows that I watch, like Arrow and Flash and Batwoman and things like that. But you know what? Like, none of it matters.
No, not so, for this. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's the thing. For Arrow and Flash, they've talked about crisis. I mean, every episode is, oh, crisis, 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 crisis.
Yes.
But there's really nothing happening there. It's like, oh, the Monitor shows up. He's like, will you betray so-and-so? Will you do this? Will you come work with me now? Blah, blah, blah. But I could have jumped right into these crisis episodes and not.
Well, I have. Anything. I mean, because haven't watched an episode of anything except for the first few episodes of Batwoman. I haven't watched an episode of anything else this season yet. And I jumped right into it and I was fine. I mean, I knew enough of the characters, obviously, either because of the fact that I had been watching the shows until recently, and also just knowing the general concept of it and the storyline and who the characters themselves. I know who the Monitor is and all that stuff, you know, from the comics. So, like, all of that combined, like, I didn't have any problems with it. But now in part two, which is much stronger than part one.
Excellent.
Overall, like, episode two to me is really just I really enjoyed it because it still will have some of its, like, the flaws of, like, the typical CW stuff, but, like, there's some really great moments in this and more of the fan service, but also I mean, I can't really get into too much, obviously, but, like, there's some really amazing Superman moments in this in part two that will make you sit there and say, like, any talk of, like, Superman not being able to be relevant in this age is, like, go away. Because the two best things, as far as I'm concerned, aside from that opening sequence in part one, in so far in these two episodes, both are Superman related.
That's awesome.
Yeah, right. And they're both in that part two, episode two, because that's where you get the Brandon Routh Superman and the Tom Welling stuff and all that is in part two. I mean, overall, now, unfortunately, after part three, which is The Flash, we have to wait until January to get the last two parts, which is odd, but yeah, I mean, I'm enjoying it for what it is and, for what they're trying to accomplish and for the fun of it all and the sheer just superhero-ness of all of this. And again, for me, the fact that, like I said, any talk of Superman not being relevant, I mean, there are three essentially versions of Superman, Clark Kent, whatever, in part two. And they're all good in their own way. And those are all really great moments. So, I think anybody at the studio should take notice of that. And there's one really just cool, just awesome, fun scene, sex segment,
stop,
whatever.
Don't spoil it.
I'm not. In part two, where aside from some CGI, it's just cool, man. You're just going to, trust me. Yeah. You got to get to part two. Just,
I know.
Yeah, watch it. Yeah, gotta get over that. And so the other thing, of course, we're watching is The Mandalorian.
Right.
And chapter five.
Yes.
We just came and went, and this was not the strongest episode of the show.
No.
But it was.
It was a fine episode with lots of fan service, man.
Yeah. Yep.
Lots of it. Bags of it. And that kind of pushed it over for me. I mean, I think there were some parts where I think some characters were wasted, but for the most part, it was a fine episode. And every show, you know, is going to have a filler episode, and I feel like this was the one. Or hopefully there isn't more because it's a short season and they're short episodes, so you can't really waste any time burning things. But I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I thought it was a great episode.
I mean, really, was it really a filler episode?
Good. I mean, nothing. So here's the thing. Nothing really happens.
Right.
In terms of The Mandalorian. I mean, you think episode one, he makes a decision. You know, there's like small little arcs that are happening. And there was really nothing here. He stopped in Mos Eisley and then left. There was some stuff that happens there, but like, there was really nothing that furthered his story.
Right.
I should say.
So, and this was the first episode to not be written by Jon Favreau.
Right.
This episode was written and directed by Dave Filoni. So that's
I think the direction was great.
Mm-hmm.
The writing.
And next week's episode, or next episode rather, this week, I guess, episode, is directed by Rick Famuyiwa, and it's also not written by Jon Favreau. Written by Christopher Yost and Rick Famuyiwa.
Okay.
So, yeah, so we'll see. And then the last two episodes are written by Jon Favreau. The episode 7, directed by, I know, episode 7, directed by Deborah Chow, who directed the great third episode. And a guy named Taika Waititi is directing the 8th episode.
Smog dude.
Yeah, you might have heard of him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and that's it. I mean, it's amazing, though. After watching this episode, it's like there's only 3 more episodes left. And clearly, you know, this show is like 30 minutes long.
Yeah.
Each episode.
Still
so
a
it's
bunch
like
of questions.
You're telling me that. Now, I don't know the length. Maybe the last episode will be longer. I don't know. But like, let's just assume it stays within this range.
Yeah.
I mean, there's anywhere from like 90 minutes to 2 hours left of this story. And it's like, I mean, unless it's going to continue on. Like, I assumed that season one would be like a story with a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
And then season two would be like a new story. Well, maybe not. Maybe this whole thing just continues on.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
If
there is a full arc in terms of a plot and narrative and all that, can't waste any time. So we'll see. But I hope things start to kind of come together for this one. Not that it's not. I mean, I'm enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I just don't want it to end and have it be like, oh.
Oh, damn. Yeah, like, a lot of stuff wasn't really handled.
Sure.
And I got to wait, like, a year and a half.
Yeah, and when you see, like, an episode like this last one, where, like, things happen, it doesn't super advance the story. It's kind of more of, like, a sidetrack type of deal.
Totally.
We think, anyway. You start to say, like, oh, well, wait a minute. Like, there's 3 episodes. Now, maybe the last episode will be longer. Who knows? We don't know. But but again, like, it doesn't seem like there's much left to this season, time-wise. So they really have a lot of things to bring home here.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
But it's a fun ride anyway, so.
Sure.
Yeah.
All
right.
The last thing I'll just say quickly, and I don't think you've caught up, is Watchmen.
Right.
Is the second to last episode. Holy shit, did that episode deliver. Okay. Holy shit. That's all I'm going to say.
So
if
they
haven't seen Watchmen.
They didn't Lindelof?
Did
they actually answer questions? Did they actually tie things up?
Episode, yes.
Okay.
A brilliant, well-written, well-shot, masterful episode in The Watchmen.
Okay.
That's all I'll say. So that should be enough for you to get back on board and check that out, because it's great stuff.
Yeah, maybe I'll have to. Maybe that'll be this weekend.
You're gonna have a lot of hours to kill, but
yeah. Well, or maybe I'll just start. Maybe I'll watch an episode a night for the next couple of nights.
Cool.
Yeah. Especially now that I didn't realize Crisis was gonna have a break. So I figured I'd be watching that the next, like, 5 nights, but I'm not now. So I only have 1 more night of that, and then I'll have some free time to watch some of that. So maybe I'll catch up on Watchmen this week so we could talk about it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Let's do some plugs and get out of here.
Sure. So, of course, go to thefanboygarage.com. It's where you can listen to the episode and buy some of our merch. Get the I'm Cool iPodcast t-shirts and various other things, mugs. It looks really cool as a mug, by the way.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. So you can get all of that there at thefanboygarage.com. And, of course, you can join the conversation with us on Twitter, at the Fanboy Garage, on Instagram, at the Fanboy Garage, and of course on our Fanboy Garage Facebook page as well. You can join our group there. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Real C Almighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at Starting Sith. As always, if you do like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star review, rating on Apple Podcasts, or wherever it is that you are listening to our wonderful show. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you guys on the next one.